You're listening to Graphic Novel Explorers Club Podcast, an audio book club.
Thanks for checking out today's episode of Graphic Novel Explorers Club. I'm one of your hosts, Johnny, joined by
Dennis.
And sadly, no Francis. Francis is taking the summer off from the podcast. So, no Francis. But today we are discussing, well, let you describe this, Dennis.
We're doing a little something different this summer. We're trying some experiments. And in this case, I was by Dimple Records, and they happen to have what they called a grab bag of comics. Specifically, the bag says, "Grab bag, amazing. Every bag is different. Surprise inside." So it's a blind bag of about four comics, $1 a piece. And it's basically a grab bag of a variety of comics from different eras. In particular, we've opened... I don't know how many, Johnny, like
five of these bags that contain five or six comics in them?
Yeah, about four each, and then something from the 80s, some in the 90s, some of the more recent name brand, DC, Marvel, Image Comics, Malibu Comics, comics I've never heard of. Just basically a variety pack. It actually reminds me a lot of when my family would go on vacation and we'd go to a grocery store and they have something like this, but usually it was from one, like Marvel or something.
Yeah, one publisher.
Right. And it'd be like this little plastic bag. You see the front comic and you see the back.
Yeah, the front one was the good one.
Right, exactly. And everything else was shit. But I mean, it was amazing because for like a buck or like two or whatever, you get like maybe like four or five comics. And that's primarily, honestly, how I was introduced to comics. I wouldn't necessarily introduce my kid to these comics just because, as we've found out going through some of these comics, the ratings are all over the place. Some are just your normal comic books. Some have nudity and sex. So don't necessarily just give a bag to your kid and assume they're going to get something wholesome.
And yes, as Dennis had mentioned, this is our summer special. These are kind of – last year we experimented with doing the entire – Preacher series, which maybe it worked, maybe it didn't.
I'd say it worked. I like our dramatic recreation. So if you haven't caught that series yet, I highly recommend it.
Yes, our recaps at the beginning of each episode were phenomenal. So normally we would say we hope you've already read this title today because all three of us have. But these are pretty hard to come by.
Right. Like,
one of the ones we're going to talk about is an adventures, excuse me, book. From 1980, July of 1980. It's just a one-off. It seems to be kind of a behind-the-scenes look into, like, the Avengers.
It's really weird. The title, it almost looks like it's selling the book, right?
Yeah,
so it's untold stories.
Avengers After Hours, but the elevator incident, Miss Marvel's shocking surprise, and it's all just part of the prelude of the War Devil.
It kind of does spoil everything. It's basically bookmarks of the main plots of the story, surprisingly.
It's all... Oh, this. So these were all...
That's all in there.
I know, but these are all side stories of the War Devil? Are you familiar with the War Devil?
I have no idea. That's the... We'll get into it, but it's the Red Ronin.
Oh, that's the same person. Okay. Yeah, it's almost like... like you're... It's all the boring shit that nobody wants to know about the Avengers.
This is really surprising comic, let me tell you. I was excited to read this comic. It was 1980s. I've never read an early version of the Avengers, and really surprising. You want to get into it?
This is like the height of Chris Claremont running the X-Men.
Oh, yeah.
They're considered some of the best overall storytelling of any Marvel series.
Right. This isn't the Silver Age. This is definitely 1980s... you would think the apex of Marvel. But here we have the story starts off with the Mighty Avengers stuck in an elevator. Like, the cover wasn't lying.
Yeah, they are stuck in an elevator, and they're all trying to...
They're trying to give Iron Man, because they don't know he's Tony Stark.
Yeah.
They're trying to give Iron Man room to basically fix the elevator.
With his laser finger.
Right. So Vision basically checks out and says, well, I can phase out. See you later. Wasp and Ant-Man shrink, but they don't go anywhere, which you would think they would be able to go.
And Yellow Jacket.
Right. And
apparently the elevators of all the Avenger in the Avenger building are all fit with some sort of pole at the top because Beast
is hanging.
Is just hanging down.
But unlike any action film or, I don't know, Die Hard, they don't assume to like sneak up through the access portal on top of the elevator. They're just stuck there.
Yeah.
So.
And they eventually get off. It's right. So stupid. And then Jarvis, Tony Stark's butler,
right,
is waiting for them with
the coffee.
Aspirin and seltzer.
Aspirin and seltzer. That's correct. Yeah. And then he thinks to himself, uh-oh, I hope they don't realize that the coffee machine isn't working.
Isn't percolating.
Isn't percolating. A big plot.
Yeah. And then what's the robot character, the female robot character?
Jocasta.
Jocasta is
kind of hitting on Vision. It's like, hey, you know, I think Captain America invites her to be part of the Avengers.
Yeah. Iron Man does. He wants he seems very subservient to Captain America.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
Unlike in the movies where I'm more familiar with this, mm-hmm. he's more antagonistic towards.
Right. They're more buddy buddies in this one.
Mm. Yeah.
And then there's a little bit of a brief introduction to another subplot where the Beast, Hank McCoy, of X-Men fame, is trying to get Wonder Man, another robot, a date.
As he calls him, Wondy.
Wondy, yes. They all have nicknames for each other. If you notice, like, I think Iron Man calls Jocasta Costa.
It reminds me of anybody that's ever worked with Robert De Niro when they talk about him, they call him Bobby.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Everyone's really, like, yeah, casual.
Yeah. And then Red Ronin.
So there's another plot where this big robot that looks like, I don't know, Ultraman is being fixed. Apparently, according to the little asterisk.
After battling
Godzilla, which I should note. Did you notice that a lot of, there's a lot of exposition in these comics?
Oh, tons.
Like modern comics, they just do dialogue, dialogue, dialogue. Here, it's almost, you can almost hear the narrator's voice a la Batman 1966. Where it's like, meanwhile, in the Avengers lab.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And there's several more instances of Jarvis trying to get the coffee made for the Avengers.
Right.
Eventually gets Vision to shoot a laser out of his head to heat it up. And then
apparently they wouldn't be happy with tea, so he's very grateful.
Yes.
In the meantime, I think Captain America is like working out, is his form of relaxation.
Yeah, and that's when Tony Stark, unbeknownst to the rest of the team as Iron Man, they don't know he's Iron Man.
Right.
Recommends Jocasta to become an Avenger, which he's happy.
And it looks like she wants to be boning Vision for sure.
See, I didn't get that.
Oh no, she totally does. You see?
And then cuts to, well, you find out Vision and Scarlet Witch mm-hmm. are married. I didn't know this.
Right.
And
but she's away.
Yeah, she took off because they seem to be having some sort of like existential crisis in their marriage.
Right. So this actually is interesting. So this is 1980s. She is wanting to have a family. So she's having this whole thing where, you know, if they have a family that could put the child in danger because they're superheroes. They never address the fact that he's a fucking robot. But anyway, whatever, Marvel. So her whole thing is like, should I? It's kind of the whole quintessential baby boom movie with Diane Keaton.
Yeah.
Can you have a career and a baby too? I don't know, Scarlet Witch.
And Miss Marvel shows up.
Right.
With her mask and wearing a purple trench coat on the beach.
Yeah. Later, eventually to be Captain Marvel in modern times.
But she seems to be like, well, you shouldn't have a kid because you won't be able to be a kick-ass.
Right. That's kind of selfish.
Yeah.
You know, why would you want to just have one kid and take care of one kid when you have the whole world to be responsible for?
Yeah, yeah.
So Wanda's all about family and having the baby, and Ms. Marvel's about being single and being a superhero.
See, it seems like Wanda, the Scarlet Witch, I got the impression that she is also not like entirely sure if she even wants kids.
I'm honestly surprised based upon Vision's reaction and lack of emotion that she would even want to have.
I know.
like he has so little emotion. Like, I thought Data had little emotion. Data has more emotion.
Data at least tries to have emotion.
Yeah, or tries to fake it.
Yeah.
Vision
or
is,
study to see how emotion works.
Like, I'm trying to figure out, and I don't have context in terms of the previous comics leading up to this, but I'm trying to figure out what Wanda actually sees in the Vision. Because he basically, when he finds out that Ms. Marvel has found Wanda, he's like, that's
okay.
Great. Thank you.
And he's watching TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it cuts back to...
Oh, even more important Avengers business.
Yes. super important is Iron Man is stepping down as the chairman of the Avengers.
Basically, it's like Robert's rule of order. Let's... The super boring... not academic, administrative functions of the Avengers.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, I'm stepping down because Tony Stark, apparently, they don't know he's Tony Stark, needs my help.
Yeah, as he says, but my boss, Mr. Stark, has had a lot of problems lately, and I think things would be better if I spent more time with him. And then Captain America responds, I have to say this comes as quite a shock. Shellhead.
Yeah, they kind of kid each other a lot back then.
Oh, man.
But my favorite part is the next page where he basically calls, like, they're busy, I think, reviewing their previous battle. Like, when they have battles, they have to review the tapes.
Yeah, you play the game tape.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Like a football
and team. Then, like, he also calls, like, a memo to order that they have to, like.
In fact, this is what he said. This is the exposition. An hour passes as the Avengers assemble to re. Oh, hold on. This comic book's really old, and some parts are hard to read. An hour passes as the Avengers assemble to relate, collate, and record data impressions from their recent battle with the Taskmaster, and then cuts to Captain America saying, "All right, folks, I guess that's that. I'll circulate a memo about the election meeting in a day or two. Until then, I suggest that you all get some rest and recreation. You deserve it. Meeting adjourned." And
wow, superhero work in the 80s was really fucking boring. And really, like, there's a lot of forms to fill out.
I want to know, in the writer's room,
they were high on cocaine, I guarantee you.
When they were doing the pitch for this, I was like, oh, you know what the kids are going to want to read about? Is Tony Stark stepping down as the chairman and how they're going to elect someone
right
to that position. Kids are dying to know about
oh,
that.
Oh, man. I can't. I'm just.
There's, like, no fighting in this
no
book. Nothing.
And then I can't wait for the kids to remember. Oh, man. You remember when Jarvis had to get the coffee heated up? And thank God the Vision.
Remember when he had all those problems getting the coffee?
I really hope they kind of incorporate that into the cinematic universe.
Oh, yes. That's Avengers 4. That's going to be a big part of it. Then you see Hank Pym. He must have just become Ant-Man at this time.
Right.
Because he doesn't know how to, like, run and jump onto.
Oh, that's Scott. I think that's Scott.
Or Scott, yeah, sorry.
So he checks out. Scott and he's like, Lang. See you later. I got to take care of my kid.
Then you cut to Beast in, like, some 70s disco clothes and Wonder Man.
All right, so the teaser from earlier in the issue when Beast said he was going to try to hook up Wonder Man on a date, now we get to see the amazing date. And they're at some sort of 60s revival concert.
Yeah.
I think...
Herman's Hermits are going to be
playing. Hermits. Henry the Eighth, I Am.
Yeah.
I Am.
And so they meet their dates, and then it turns out Wonder Man's date has a child, and she brought the child on the date.
Right. She's a divorcee, so she's not married.
Yeah. And her sister couldn't watch the kid.
Right.
And then he's shocked when the kid starts climbing on him. I'm just like, what the fuck is...
No personal space.
And then you get to the end of the story. This is a really quick read. I would be so pissed if I was a kid.
How much did you pay for this? How much was the issue back then?
40 cents.
40 cents. I would be pissed.
So this is probably the equivalent of like $4 or $5 nowadays.
Yeah, I would definitely want my 40 cents back.
So you know what this reminds me of is in the volumes, of Fables,
mm-hmm,
is volume, I think it's 13,
mm-hmm,
where Bigby Wolf is turned into a monkey, and then they go and they interact with actual literary ideas.
Oh, really?
And it is not good. I could. It's such a departure from the rest of the story, and it's just like I almost felt like it was really self-indulgent writing.
You remember? Did you watch Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
Remember the fly episode?
No, I don't remember that.
Remember where the fly, Walter's trying to kill the fly that's inside the lab, and he spends the whole time trying to kill the fly. It's pretty infamous, but that's what it is. It's like a total different tone.
Well, and it just feels like self-indulgent writing almost. Like, I don't know what the point of the story is, just because they had to fill something?
Well, yeah, the only things it perpetuates is this Ronin thing. The guy, basically, we kind of skipped that part, but the scientist who rebuilt Ronin is now taking it over and has stolen it to start World War III. So that's one big plot point. We find out that Ms. Marvel had fainted because, shocker, end, she's 3 months pregnant.
Yeah.
For who? I don't know.
And we'll never find out.
Probably not. Tony Stark apparently has to step down for the Avengers, but not in a very dramatic fashion. More like, okay.
I'm just giving you my 2 weeks notice.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to call a meeting. It was amazing read. I have to say that. I especially liked, not including the story, just looking, because this is an actual old issue, looking at the old ads.
That was the really cool stuff to see, is all the old ads for like bubblegum, just the shit that they used to sell at the back of the books. Like, get you know, X-ray vision glasses, BB guns, all the shit that kids nowadays, I don't think they really have this. When we were kids and you would send away for something and it would take weeks.
Right.
You know, to get to you.
And you thought it looked like the coolest thing. And the thing is, your impression is based on a super shitty, hand-drawn, maybe in color, picture of what it is.
But I think those paired so well with comic books because your imagination's already so geared up. You're like, when you were a kid, you know, you'd read through something like this. You'd be like, oh, so cool. And then look at, there's all this shit at the back of the book that's like something that the Avengers would probably use.
I don't think the Avengers would use the pocket spy scope, which is pen size, which it lets you spy on a girl in a bikini, or the X-ray vision goggles, which apparently lets you look at a lady's underwear based upon the...
But, you know, you'd get these things 2 months later, you'd open it and be like, and the disappointment would just be like, fuck, you assholes, you got me.
Right.
You know how hard it was for me to get this $5 to send off for this piece of shit? Lame-ass piece of plastic. I guess now it's just 99-cent store.
Man. I really wanted this phony arm cast, though, because apparently you can get sympathy from the ladies. And then I always thought it was cool. Or how about this one, the coin changer for when you go to the arcade?
Oh, nice.
Like you're like one of those change dudes? Oh, yeah.
Just dishing out those quarters. I thought it was that stuff was really neat to see. It just, you know, it harkens back to a time that doesn't exist anymore. So,
And you know, it brings to mind too. I've totally forgotten about this, but I don't know if you noticed it in the top right, it's approved by the Comics Code, and so that was one of those self-censoring things. So they couldn't like depict certain things.
Yeah, that started after in the 60s.
Yeah, and it's most comics, I don't think, even follow that anymore.
No, hell no. Yeah, not anymore.
Although I don't know if you read this, Johnny. Though, so the letters page is one of my favorite sections, and there's this before and after drawing. And it depicts the original picture, which is a guy who looks like he's white, but then he's drawn as African-American in the after. And I was like, what? What's going on here? So I read the letter.
No, I didn't read that.
So here, I'm going to read the letter to you.
Oh, no.
So here's from the reader. Dear Marvel, Battleground Pittsburgh was definitely a horse of a different color. You changed the whole complexion of the comic by changing Joe Conroy from a white man to a black man. So, and that's signed Robert Becker and Chris Becker. And then Marvel writes back, you noticed that, did you? Actually, so did I when I saw an early copy of Avengers number 192 fresh off the presses. You can imagine how my face changed from white to purple when I saw the man to whom I had given a quote-unquote black dialect looking as white as a sheet in the Axion ad. Obviously, there was a mix-up, But the end result was that quite a number of faces at Marvel turned red with embarrassment.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I don't think they would respond quite that way with quote-unquote black dialect. I thought overall the value of a dollar for these comics was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's neat to see. One of the things Dennis and I were talking about before is just how bland a lot of the drawings are in these books. Mm-hmm. They're not very complicated. They're very simple. It's just like, quick, get the shit out. We got to get this out the door into the kids' hands again next week.
But then to compare to the 90s comics we ended up getting, which was super aggro muscles.
Yeah.
Everyone had metal armbands and
metal face jaw parts, right, and
super long legs, super buff torso.
Yeah. Just overly drawn.
Yeah, we got a few Wildcat comics, some Image comics that were pretty interesting.
Yeah.
The Brigade. The Regulators. Oh, I love this. This is one of my favorites, The Regulators. This guy is basically almost like every trope. He's got a ponytail. He's got like almost like a Ghost Rider chains around his fur belt.
He's got the double band on his legs.
Which served no purpose because there's no actual holster. You can't see on this one, but he has spike shoulder pads. So, and his name is Blackjack, of course. Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's an interesting time capsule. And then one interesting comic that I know Johnny had found was one I want to find out more about was a DC comic called Angel Love. And I briefly looked at it, but one of the things talks about her, I guess, discovering cocaine. So I want to read more about this.
What year was that from, though? Because that might have been like the tail end of the Just Say No.
86.
Oh, that was smack in the middle of Just Say No.
Well, the thing is that I think this is from what I read a little bit about. It's almost, imagine Sex in the City, but in the comic book world. So it was written by a woman, and it deals with sex.
Relationships
and drugs.
Cocaine. What one thing we forgot to talk about, this going back to this Avengers book, is just how, like, the story is terrible.
Right.
The character interactions are god awful. It's a pretty dumb fucking story, a waste of time.
They spend 6 pages in that elevator.
Yeah.
You know that.
How did, like, the Marvel movies, like, become so much better than...
Well, I think that's the advantage of the movies. So they have a deadline, right? So they got to fill every issue, 12 issues a year, plus whatever how many other comics they got, right? So they got to fill it with this bullshit. But the movies are very... Like, they can eliminate all that and just get to the
boil it down to
right,
the...
Right, exactly. I mean... Had this been, I don't know. Honestly, sometimes if you watch some of the Marvel TV shows, even the modern ones, some of them kind of have the whole stuck in the elevator kind of feel to it.
And like, and that's probably the trouble when you're trying to fill 22 episodes of something.
Right.
You know, which is why.
Even 13 with the Netflix, I would argue, and you've seen more than I have in some cases, but I would argue some of the shows could be pared down to probably 8 episodes of meat.
Oh, yeah.
And
like the Defenders should have been like 4 episodes.
Yeah. And 13 seems like not that much, especially compared to the 22 that's normally for broadcast TV. But they're just too much fluff. They always have a road trip. They always do something else. There's just a lot of, well, equivalent of being stuck in the elevator.
Or trying to get the coffee percolating.
Or going on a date.
But it speaks to like... I guess Kevin Feige, who's the head of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like to approach, I think it was Paramount did the first one, right? That was Iron Man?
Right.
Mm-hmm. To say like, hey, if we do this, like, don't make this comic book. Let's make a movie based on the comic books that's actually entertaining and there's more to it than just character interaction, you know, and it's like... superficial character interaction just to move the plot along. Not saying that the Marvel movies are, you know, great cinema, but they're way better than this comic book.
Well, and especially Iron Man for that time, and we're stepping away from the comics a bit, but I think about Iron Man, and I think about the other superhero films that had come out at that time, or a little bit before then. Blade, the Fantastic Four films, Batman, Dark Knight.
The first X-Men movie.
The first X-Men movies. A lot of them were either dark or they were super campy. And I think Iron Man was a good blend. He wasn't overly dark. He had a sense of humor, but it wasn't like Fantastic Four where it just seemed too bright and too goofy.
Yeah.
So somehow they were able to get just that right mixture, and then they were able to stick to that formula and then eventually grow it. I mean, to their credit, the Marvel films have like a different flavor each time. So all the Thor films suck, but.
Oh, I like the last Thor movie.
Oh, no, the last one.
Yeah, second one was garbage.
First and second are like complete shit.
You know, I liked the first one when it came out.
Thor isn't in here.
Yeah, he's not. He was on Asgard doing something. But I liked the first Thor movie because that could have been so bad. Like, how do you take a Norse mythology that's set in a completely different technological age? And then have them transported to a small town in Arizona or New Mexico, wherever the fuck they were at. Like, it could have been bad. Like, that's a testament to Kenneth Branagh's directing and storytelling abilities to pull that shit off.
Yeah, to be fair, what's his name who directed Swingers and Iron Man? He actually had doubts about Thor. Like, if they could pull off the merging.
John, I almost said Favreau, but I know it's not Favreau.
No, is it?
Yeah, is it Favreau?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He had doubts that you could combine it because, Iron Man's all high tech and everything. And
more set in reality. I mean.
Right. It's more grounded.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. But, all right. Well, yeah. It was interesting to read these and to flip through these old books just to see. They're almost time capsules of, you know, a different era.
Now, don't assume you'll be getting gold winners every time. We opened about 9 packs of these.
I wouldn't say this is a winner. This Avengers book is a winner.
I think it's a winner. I think, if anything, for me, for the ads and for the Hostess Pie comic involving, I think, the Thing.
Hulk?
The Hulk.
Oh, was it the Thing?
I thought it was the Hulk. One of the two. Those are worth it for me.
Fighting a castle being?
Yeah.
Like it was a...
Totally.
Like a castle... Oh, it was the Thing, yeah.
And then they actually, if I remember correctly, that was one of the few companies where they hired DC and Marvel. So if you went in a DC comic book of that era, there would be Superman or Batman doing Hostess Pie stuff.
Oh.
So for me, that was worth it. Would I spend $10 again, which I got 10 packs? I don't know. There was a lot of garbage, a lot of weird comics I've never heard of.
What are you going to do with these?
Probably, the good ones, I'll like let my son flip through them. The bad ones, I just may donate or recycle. I don't know. Some of those TNA ones, I can't in good conscience, let any kid look at.
Yeah.
Some of them are, I don't know. These Wildcat ones.
In our old neighborhood, someone had made a lending library.
Oh, yeah.
If you're not familiar with what that is, a lending library is basically you make a box, some sort of like box with cabinet doors,
mm-hmm.
and then people can put books in there that they don't want to read anymore, and other people can come by and grab them.
Totally.
They're usually set up in neighborhoods. At our old neighborhood that we lived in Tahoe Park, someone had a big Doctor Who police box. It was huge. And you'd open it, and the upper two shelves were adult books, and then the bottom two were for kids. Well, I had the Boys, Garth Ennis's The Boys, and I was like, I'm not reading these ever again.
Right.
And so I put them, I rubber banded them. I had a giant rubber band all the volumes together and mm-hmm. then put a note on there saying, do not let children read this. And put it in there. It was like, oh, you will scar your fucking kids.
Yeah, no kidding, man.
Let them read this fucking book. But.
I mean, there's an idea. You could always buy a bunch of these, at least sift through them. Don't give them blindly to kids, and then give them out for Halloween, individual issues.
All right. So, again, this was our summer special. These are real quick episodes. Again, Francis is busy this summer, so we're going to have guest hosts. Last week, we had November Rain.
November Rain.
What's her name?
November Cosplay, man.
November Cosplay.
No, Guns N' Roses were here.
No, just the song stopped by.
Right.
Something in the November Rain.
Well, and then weirdly enough, Elton John was playing the piano in the background.
That was weird. But yeah, so this is our summer special. It's just a couple quick episodes, and then we'll be back sometime in early 2019, I think. So
yeah, we're just experimenting with stuff.
Yeah. So you can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at GN Explorers Club. You can leave a comment on Facebook or email us at gnexplorersclub@gmail.com. And Graphic Novel Explorers Club is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever podcasts are available. We'll see you next week.
Excelsior.